you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics or host the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
Now that's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. Now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the live broadcast. My name is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. And we have a fantastic program lined up for you tonight. In about 15 minutes, we'll be bringing our guest on. His name is Ronald Reichleck, and this is a book. It's unbelievable. They were doing an interview. Glenn Beck was on this book last week. I heard it, and I said, man, we've got to get Ronald Reichleck on our program to talk about it. The name of the book is Disinformation, and it's a fascinating look at how the Russians, including, you know, back in the day, the Soviet Union, use disinformation to accomplish their political and military goals. Very, very interesting book. I haven't read the whole book, but I've gone through a lot of it, and we've got some interesting things to talk about, including something fascinating we want to talk about the Kennedy assassination, which is mentioned in the book in a few places. So some interesting information there. I know we've got quite a few listeners that are always interested in the topic of the Kennedy assassination. Of course, Bob Yetman and I, we wrote the book that came out in November, our book on the Kennedy assassination, which proffers the theory that the Federal Reserve might have been involved. And that book is available over at Amazon.com. Hey, we've got some big news to share with you about the radio show, about our Sunday night broadcast, but I'm not comfortable yet giving you the news tonight. Probably I will be able to share with you the news in the next week or two, a major announcement about us becoming affiliated with a satellite network and also the program being picked up and syndicated on terrestrial radio. So that's something exciting. Of course, I've been on internet radio for a while. I've been on terrestrial radio all the way back to the early 1990s. Including having my own nationally syndicated radio show and nationally syndicated television show. Well, I came back to radio as a regular presence on the internet about 2 or 3 years ago, and have been on now on Blog Talk Radio for a year, and we're also being simulcasted over at TalkStreamLive.com. But it is exciting to let everybody know, and we're not going to give you any of the specific details yet, but a major radio network is going to likely be, we're going to be finalizing a contract with them here shortly, which will put this program on your regular local radio station nationwide. We're also looking at, of course, it'll be up on satellite and also looking at putting it out on shortwave. And, of course, it'll still be on the Internet. So for those of you that continue to enjoy listening to us live on Sunday nights over at TalkStreamLive.com, you'll still be able to find us there. Probably something that will happen within a month or so that will actually be flipping the switch and going onto terrestrial radio. But in the meantime, of course, you can still follow us over at TalkStreamLive.com. And even when we make the switch over, we'll still be over there. But may also be on your local radio station as well. So lots of exciting things happening with the radio program. Daylight savings time kicked in today. And it was funny. One of my friends on Facebook, he made the post. I just read it here before going on air. He said, you know something's wrong when you're pulling into church and everybody else is leaving. And so he obviously did not push his clock ahead 1 hour. But, you know, I don't know why it is. Why does 1 hour seem to mess us up so much? I used to do a lot of traveling and, you know, dealt with the whole issue of jet lag. Well, it was never really a huge problem for me, even flying from, you know, West Coast to East Coast and all that. Certainly you realized it. But normally, like within a day or so, it was no big deal, even a three-hour time change. But I don't know why it is. It just seems to really affect people. And from what I've read, the change to and from daylight savings time affects people not just for a day or two, but some people are messed up for a couple, 3 weeks. I know for me, I'm actually enjoying it a little bit because I don't mind getting up an hour earlier. That's not a problem. For me, I tend to get, as I'm getting older, I tend to get a little bit sleepy around 9 or 10 o'clock at night, so I feel like it's an hour earlier for me doing the radio show tonight, so I've only had to grab a couple of cups of coffee so far to keep myself energized. So I hope you didn't miss daylight savings time today, but if you did, now's the time to figure things out before you end up being late to work tomorrow. Also, we want to mention to you, we get a lot of emails from people that are having legal issues, people that, you know, facing foreclosure, wondering if they need to file for bankruptcy, dealing with creditor harassment, all kinds of different legal issues. And of course, I'm not an attorney. So there is a service, however, that we recommend, and it's called Prepaid Legal. Actually, they've changed their name in recent years to Legal Shield. And in fact, my wife, Ann, and I, we actually used to be licensed, and we offered this as a, it's sort of like a regulated as insurance in many states, and so you have to get a license and all that. And we used to actually make the service available. And what it does is it gives you unlimited access to lawyers in most states for around $20 to $25 a month by phone. And I've been a member of this now for about 12 years. In fact, I just used it a month ago to get something removed from my wife's credit report that was inaccurate, and we had written to the credit bureau, not once, but three times. They still hadn't removed it. And so we decided to use our Prepaid Legal, our Legal Shield membership, and we called up there, and one of their lawyers sent a threatening letter to the credit bureau, and within a week, the item was removed. So it really is a great thing to have. And if you're interested in finding out more about it, you can go to the website defendyourrights.us, defendyourrights.us. And our son, Jim, who's now just graduating from UCF, he's taking over our Legal Shield business and sort of carrying that tradition on. For those that want to talk to him directly about Legal Shield, you can call him at 386-589-3418. That's 386-589-3418. Or go to the website that we have set up that tells you all about it, defendyourrights.us, defendyourrights.us. Okay, you don't want to miss our next two shows also, because we've got coming up next week Ron Rhodes. And Ron Rhodes is going to be joining us for the hour to talk about Mormonism. And this is a pretty controversial area to go into, but I've had Ron Rhodes on before on other topics. We've never had him on to talk about Mormonism, but I want to have him on to talk about Mormonism because, you know, frankly, a lot of people have questions about it. There's well-known people in the media, in politics. Mitt Romney is a Mormon. Glenn Beck is a Mormon. In fact, He talks about Mormonism now pretty frequently on his radio show. I like to listen to his show for the politics. I don't really enjoy his discussions of Mormonism. That's not my area of interest, but it's something that people should know about. You know, what are the differences between evangelical Christianity and Mormonism? Dr. Ron Rhodes will be our guest next week. And then the following week, we're going to have Sandy Botkin. And if you don't know Sandy, this guy, he's brilliant, and his book is called Lower Your Taxes, and he's also got a book out on financial freedom as well. But he's making the talk show rounds right now because why? It's tax season. And I heard him on a show a couple of weeks ago, and he was making the great point that so many people don't take advantage of, you know, simple tax deductions that they're entitled to. Like if you have a small home-based business, you're entitled to write off a home office if you legitimately have a section of your house set up as an office. And that deduction can be worth thousands of dollars alone. So we're going to be talking about some of these little-known tax deductions or you know, deductions that people just don't think to pursue, ways to legally and ethically, without, you know, getting in any legal trouble, how to lower your taxes with tax expert Sandy Botkin. Other things in the news, I've got my Twitter feed up here right now, twitter.com/James L. Paris. That's really the best way to follow me 24/7 is over at Twitter. I found this interesting today. I was doing a little bit of research on what's going on with Kevin Trudeau, the infomercial guy. We're not going to get into the whole story here tonight, but most of you know who he is. Very charismatic guy. He's gone from various business opportunities to advice and books on health and nutrition and so forth and so on. Well, along the way, you know, in building his infomercial empire, he has crossed swords quite a few times with the Federal Trade Commission. In fact, the Federal Trade Commission has a civil fine against him for over $30 million. And so there's been litigation for the last couple of years with Trudeau and the federal government over Trudeau paying these fines. And Trudeau's story is he has no assets, but the government's position is that Kevin Trudeau has engaged in some very fancy asset protection strategies where all of his personal assets are held by different corporations. There's allegations that he has millions of dollars offshore, so forth and so on. And he's actually being held right now in jail on contempt of court charges. And I don't know how long a person can be held in jail on contempt of court charges. I guess in theory you could stay there forever, so long as, and the judge brings you in every 2 or 3 months. In this case, they ask him, you know, where the assets are and ask him to answer the questions, and to the extent that they believe he's not cooperating, they send him back to jail. And it's just a fascinating story. I've got a link to the latest here about his California home is being auctioned, including all the contents. And there's a lot of sort of unusual Kevin Trudeau memorabilia that apparently his fans are already lining up with excitement to buy. This week, for those that like Bitcoin and follow Bitcoin like I do, interesting story this week. Newsweek claims to have discovered the creator of Bitcoin. And what's fascinating about this story is that most Bitcoin aficionados thought that the name Satoshi Nakamoto was a pseudonym, that this was not a real person, but a pseudonym, a pen name, if you will, of the creator of Bitcoin. But lo and behold, Newsweek has tracked a guy down to Southern California who they claim, and by the way, this is a raging debate on the internet right now, if this guy really is the creator of Bitcoin or not. But the more I read, the more it seems like he is. And what's fascinating about this guy, his name actually is Satoshi Nakamoto, so that's his real name. But what's even more strange about it is, according to the reports I've read, is that this guy is like a ghost in that apparently he's worked in a classified capacity for decades, and there's nothing you can find out about his history. very weird, and this is just going to, no doubt, fuel speculation about Bitcoin. I mean, there's already, I don't know how many conspiracy theories about Bitcoin and who's behind it, and is it even our own government that is behind Bitcoin? I mean, who knows now? I mean, if this guy Nakamoto is the real guy and he has a classified status, you know, top secret, you know, clearance, and has been working for our own government, and he's also the creator of Bitcoin, it really does raise a lot of interesting questions. But a lot of links to different stories throughout the week on this whole Satoshi Nakamoto story. In fact, Newsweek, that has been out of print now for some number of months, has just gone to strictly online publication. They're now actually printing an issue this week of Newsweek to be able to sell what they believe will probably be like a collector's edition with this guy, Satoshi Nakamoto, on the cover, the whole Bitcoin thing. So it just, the whole Bitcoin story, it gets stranger and stranger. And literally every morning I wake up and I say to myself, okay, there can't be another big news flash about Bitcoin today. I mean, it can't be every day. And it is. It's whether it's MT Gox, the exchange in Japan going under, or what happened, the tragic story this last week, an apparent suicide of a young lady that was running a Bitcoin exchange, an American. It's just every day there is something going on with Bitcoin. And Bitcoin's still trading over $600 the last I checked. That I haven't gotten a quote today. Let me check over here. The best place to check, by the way, if you don't want to go to the homepage of christianmoney.com, we do have a cryptocurrency ticker on the right-hand sidebar. But another place to go is bitstamp.net. Last trade, $638 on Bitcoin. And, of course, for those who are regular listeners, you know my story that I got in on Bitcoin when it was at $12 back in the fall of 2012. I wish I had put in a lot more money than I did, but that's another topic for another show. All right, without any further delay, we're going to welcome our guest to the program. This is the first time that he's been with us, and he is a law professor. And he hasn't been with us before, so we're going to have him tell us a little bit about himself. And Ron Reichleck, am I saying your name correctly? I want to start with that, sir. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Hey Jim. It's Reichleck, but anything close is great.
All right, Reichleck. That is easier than what I was trying to do with it. And here I am saying Satoshi Nakamoto, and I can't pronounce your last name, which is arguably much easier than that. You're an interesting guy. I did some reading on you today. Are you currently teaching at a college? You're a law professor currently, is that right?
Yes, I'm a law professor at the University of Mississippi, also known as Ole Miss.
All right, and your expertise, interestingly enough, is not necessarily on the Soviet Union and Russia and all of that. I mean, obviously you have a huge amount of expertise in that, but according to your introduction in the book, you're actually an expert on Pope Pius, is that right?
Yeah, and that's actually correct, and it's kind of funny. That's what this project started focusing on, and we morphed away from that somewhat, but yes, that's correct.
Well, why don't we start with, tell us a little bit about your co-author, because this is going to be important for people to understand sort of the backstory of this. Then I want to get into this Pope story, because we have a very wide Christian audience with us on Sunday nights, and I think that would be interesting to start with after we get a little background on Ion Mihai Pachepa. Who is Lieutenant General Ion Mihai Pachepa? And by the way, correct my pronunciation if I've butchered that one as well.
You nailed Pachepa. Everybody messes that up, but you got it just right. Pachepa was the number two man in Romania when it was communist under Ceausescu. He ran the equivalent of the CIA for Romania, where he was involved in stealing corporate ideas and other things. And he defected 35 years ago when Jimmy Carter was still president. He's the highest-ranking Soviet bloc officer ever to defect. So he spent 3 years debriefing with the CIA, telling him everything he knew. That information ultimately became a book known as Red Horizons. The book Red Horizons led to and was significantly involved in the ultimate prosecution and conviction of Ceausescu for genocide. Ronald Reagan called that book, Red Horizons, his Bible for dealing with dictators. So Pacepa, by the way, lives in the United States today, but Ceausescu, before he was convicted and executed, put a $2 million bounty on my co-author Pacepa's head. So Pacepa has lived under a false identity in the United States for over three decades now. And he doesn't make personal appearances or even radio kind of appearances, but he's a fascinating man, a man who was involved in some very bad things, but came to the United States and said he wanted to set the record straight on a number of things.
Wow. So he lives right now in the United States, and he's sort of in something like the Witness Protection Program or something along those lines?
Yeah, well, actually, he works independently of the federal government. What happened several years ago, a couple of federal agents sold his identity to Gaddafi for $1 million. So when that got out, he said, "Okay, I'm not dealing with the federal government anymore." And he essentially created his own identity. So he's not in an official witness protection program, but he has created his own a witness protection program.
Thought there were a few things the government could do right, you thought, well, maybe the witness protection program is something that they should still be doing. But then you hear a story like this. Now, one of the things that I found fascinating about the book, and correct me if my perspective on this is wrong, but it seems like what the message of the book is that what most people think of when they think of espionage is someone stealing information, and the idea of bugging the hotel room of a president that's on a trip or somehow bribing a U.S. official to get inside information. But really, most of the stories in the book talk more about the idea of planting false information in the minds of your enemy as even a greater strategy than the idea of stealing their secrets. Is that sort of the centerpiece of the book, if I'm understanding it right?
That's exactly correct. But Chaffa says, you think of stealing information, but often the worst thing that spies can do is plant false information, create doubt, make people think, what's white is black. And he says, the Soviets developed that to what they called a science, to be able to convince people. It began with convincing people within Russia or the Soviet Union that their current leader was a great man and all the ills of society were attributable to previous leaders. But ultimately, that also became a weapon of international importance by creating doubts in foreign nations and really used it quite effectively in a number of areas.
Now, let's talk about your expertise in particular. I mean, I don't want to shortchange you on being an expert here. Obviously, you're co-author of this book, so you're equally an expert on Soviet history. But I find it fascinating. You're actually a very well-known Catholic, from what I understand. You are a Catholic scholar, and one of your areas of expertise in Catholicism is Pope Pius. And share with us the disinformation that was used in the case of Pope Pius. Give us that example and how that played out in history.
Well, Pope Pius XII was the pope during World War II. If your listeners have heard of him, unfortunately, they may know him by the moniker Hitler's Pope, because there was a book that came out about 12 years ago, 14 years ago, that said he was too lenient towards the Nazis, that he didn't care enough about the Jews. There's an array of allegations like that. I've written two books and several chapters and articles and other things about him, and it's very clear during the war, after the war, up through and the time of his death, he was a champion of the Jews. He was, Golda Meir, when he passed away, said, he's the one guy who stood behind us. Editorials from the New York Times said, he was the lonely voice crying out in the silence of a continent. So, how does he go from this to where by the 1960s, people are saying that, you know, he was really a bad guy. And it turns out that my co-author, Pacheco, was involved in a disinformation campaign. They put together a campaign to discredit the Pope after he had died. So it's not that they cared about the Pope. I mean, they did it at one level, but if they could convince the world that the Pope had somehow been sympathetic to the Nazis or had not cared about the Jews, you bring discredit certainly on the Catholic Church, but also at some levels Christianity, Western values, maybe, you know, the very idea of religion itself. So it served so many of the Soviet purposes to create this myth, and there were, and we go through in a fair amount of detail in the book of how they went about crafting a play, to have a play raise the issues, and funding lectures and books, speeches, articles about these issues. And it's just, it was all done really to undermine Western values.
And Ronald, Dr. Reichlich, you say that there is a formula, and explain to us the formula of disinformation, which includes that there must be at least a kernel of truth to the story, because if someone just makes up a story out of whole cloth, that doesn't really work. So how does this actually happen? I mean, is there literally like a war room somewhere where there are meetings and people come in with ideas, or they're reading the newspaper and saying, hey, we can take this actual event that really did happen and we can spin it into this story, and here's what that might do for us. But there has to be some grain of truth to it. Is that right?
That is correct. I mean, they're actually, the KGB had a manual that talked about how to fabricate a story, whether you're trying to discredit someone, frame them in a bad way, or whether you're trying to promote them. Here's what you do. You find some nuggets of truth that you build a case around. You make sure that there are no original documents involved. If someone wants to see documentary evidence, you always make sure it's a photocopy. Try to implant it at low levels. I mean, one of the things that the Soviet agents did in the United States, for instance, in the 1960s, they would try to sidle up to little, what you might almost think of as inconsequential magazines or newspapers, but they might loan some money, might provide some information, might help out a struggling publication, and pretty soon the publication becomes indebted to the agent. Now that little publication is going to run articles that the Soviets want to have run, and when they've got articles in three or four little publications, the big magazines, the big newspapers start to take note of it, so they'll publish articles thinking that, by the way, it looks like there's three different sources here, so, you know, a reporter will write a story based upon what appears to be three different sources, but really it's all come from one agency, or, you know, one group, the Soviet Intelligence Force, that has planted it all over, and pretty soon everybody's hearing it, and when everybody's heard it, it takes on a life of its own.
Now, with the internet age that we're in today, I mean, that what you just said, you know, is a perfect template. All that we have to see is a story on one website, and then all of a sudden it virally goes out, and it's on. I mean, there have been hoaxes where someone will post that a celebrity has died, and then all of a sudden it's in newspapers, it's on multiple websites, and this person is out in a microphone saying, hey, I haven't really died, I'm still alive. It's very easy today, especially on the internet. Are these strategies, are we talking about these in a historical context or a present-day context? Are we still seeing the Russians using these same strategies today?
We very much take this up to the current day, and we've seen it develop. You know, once upon a time, we could point expressly at Russia and the Soviet Union, but you begin to see this spread in other areas, and we're even to a certain extent, sometimes what happens within the United States when we've got folks who are trying to attribute, trying to build up somebody or discredit somebody. One of the things about disinformation is it has to come from a trusted source. So sort of the classic story here is during the Vietnam War, anything that came out of the Kremlin, we of course doubted very seriously. Americans just knew not to trust it. But if those agents could get the same story printed in the New York Times or coming from an official governmental, American governmental source, or even sometimes, for instance, when John Kerry made his very famous statement about how American soldiers were acting, marauding and slaughtering and killing people, you know, Kerry had, I assume, believed what he said, had picked up on some disinformation that had been put in place. But Chapa, by the way, said, when he heard, as soon as he heard Kerry say that, he said, you know, that's our stuff. That's the word we're putting out. Kerry says that, and everybody sees this young American soldier come forward and testify about these horrible things. We all believe it. Whereas we would not have believed it if it had come from the Kremlin. So, you know, that's another important rule of disinformation.
And, of course, in today's world, many people may not know this, but the Russians actually have an English-speaking TV channel called Russia Today, which they've dropped the Russia Today. It's just RT. And they've hired quite a few American journalists to actually work for Russia Today, and that seems to be following your playbook right here. So you take a trusted voice, someone that has an American heritage, who has a journalistic pedigree here in the U.S., you put them on a Russian channel, and now you're able to put that information out through a trusted voice.
Well, you're absolutely correct, Jim, and you know, I don't get that network here where I live, but I've been on the road before, flipping around looking for a news story, and I've watched a little bit of that, and it's a very different perspective. I mean, it's very much pro-Russia and much more critical of the United States, and not, you know, sometimes, you know, we may have networks that are more conservative, or more, you know, more Democrat, or more liberal, or more Republican, conservative, liberal. This one is very much anti-America. It's not. It doesn't take a party line, but it was subtle. It was subtle, but it was evident to me before I knew what RTV was. I'm watching this thing, and then I had to look up and figure out what it was.
Very interesting, and we're going to take a break now, Dr. Reichelach, and we're going to be back in 4 minutes with our guest. His name is Dr. Ronald Reichelach, and the name of the book is Disinformation, and fascinating information in this book. I mean, this is one of those books where you're going to have a hard time putting it down once you start reading it, so maybe wait until Friday night to open it up, and you'll read it, get through the whole thing in the course of a weekend. Fascinating read. And, you know, all kinds of great true stories to back up, you know, their thesis on how the Russians use disinformation. Now, when we come back from this break, we're going to get into something very fascinating, the JFK assassination, and how did the Russians, how did they use disinformation in the JFK assassination story to possibly hide their tracks and their involvement? We'll get into all of that, and we'll start taking your phone calls at 888-287-3316. The number again, 888-287-3316. And we'll take some questions by email as well tonight. The email address, jim@christianmoney.com, jim@christianmoney.com, or again, speak to our guests live, toll-free, 888-287-3316. We'll be back in 4 minutes. Stand by. Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. Recently, I did an event in Chicago unveiling a brand new service called Christian Money Plus. It's been years in the making, and I'm super excited to let you know that it is now available. At the centerpiece of this new program is the ability for you to have unlimited access to me personally using the Internet. You'll also receive my 12-page newsletter mailed to your home each and every month. Now, there are tons of other benefits, such as our suite of financial calculators, model portfolios, and much, much more. Right now, I'm offering several bonuses to our new subscribers. Some of these bonuses include a video on how to use the Internet to raise money for your idea or project. This is money you will never have to pay back. There's also a second video on how to save money by dropping cable TV, and I also cover on this video how to get free home phone service for life. Yes, you can drop cable TV and still get hundreds of channels on your television set legally using the internet. All of that, including how to get the free home phone service for life, all of that on your second bonus video. Additional bonus reports include how to opt out of Obamacare, as I did, and save thousands by joining what's called Christian Medical Sharing. Another bonus report shows you step-by-step how to stop Google from spying on you. All of this information is available right now to subscribers of our brand new service, Christian Money Plus. I sure hope you'll consider joining us. All of the money that comes in every month from Christian Money Plus goes to further the mission of our website, ChristianMoney.com. Check it out today. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. Again, that's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. You can subscribe right now and access all of these bonus reports within a matter of just a few seconds. Check it out right now. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems, the biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need, how prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues, how to pray for a financial miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com, how to pray for a financial miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You know, about a year ago, I started getting concerned about the cost of our family's health insurance, literally costing us thousands and thousands of dollars each year, and the cost continued to go up and up and up. And I started doing some research into an alternative called Christian Medical Sharing. And I learned that through a special law, a special provision, Christians are able to opt out of Obamacare and actually get into this alternative to traditional health insurance called Christian Medical Sharing. I decided to go ahead and move into a plan like that, and I'm saving a lot of money. Now, if you'd like to find out more about it, get more of the details to find out if it's for you or not, I've written an article on it. In the article, I give you more details, including I actually mention the organization that I decided to go with. If you'd like to get all of the information on this and find out if it might be for you, check out this website, medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. That's medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. Okay, we are back. My name is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You can follow me at Twitter, twitter.com/James L. Paris. Our guest tonight, Dr. Ronald Reichleck, and we're talking about his book, Disinformation. Fascinating book. You don't want to miss this one. And by the way, I've got to ask Dr. Reichleck, is the book back available? Because it ended up being sold out. I tried to buy it earlier this week, and it was sold out. You couldn't get a copy on Amazon, so I opted to just take it on my Kindle, and I have the Kindle version. But is the print version back available for people that want to grab that?
Yeah, thanks. I think it was very quickly sold out and very quickly I don't think they were ready for the bump we got when Glenn Beck show aired.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's what I thought, because I had heard you on with Glenn, and then I saw that the book was sold out, no more books available. So I'm sure somebody called the publisher and figured out how to get some more books over to the Amazon warehouse. Very, very good. All right, before we talk about JFK, we do have a caller, so let's go to the caller first, and we have Joanne with us, one of our regular callers from Minnesota. Good to have you with us, Joanne.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. I've been listening about the whole disinformation thing. I was just wondering what your perspective of what is going on in the Ukraine is, and how the Russians are using disinformation to sway public opinion right now, currently, regarding the situation.
Okay, did you hear that clearly, Ronald?
Yeah, I did, and that's a great question, Joanne. It's I believe it has been significant. I think if you look particularly at Crimea, the area in southern Ukraine that has been essentially now invaded or taken over, that's an area where the news has been filtered through Russian sources for quite some time. There's been infiltration also into the Russian Orthodox Church in that area. So people who have lived there have, in fact, been getting information from sources they thought they could trust, but in fact that were not very trustworthy. So when they do surveys, there are elections that show folks who live there identify closely with Russia and may favor some of the actions that Putin has undertaken. That's not people reacting to legitimate information. That's people reacting to truly disinformation. So I think that's played an enormous role.
Right, and I've been hearing more of this disinformation in recent days. We're hearing even, you know, friendly voices in our own media saying things like, well, you know, of course, you know, this is where Russia has a naval interest, and there's a major seaport there, and historically Russia has a connection here, so, you know, why shouldn't they be invading? And, you know, my view on it is, well, look, you know, we have a historical connection with England, but we wouldn't be very happy if they invaded us tomorrow morning to take over, because historically we have that link there. But there two different stories, and as you pointed out earlier about even manipulating our own media, it seems like I've seen in recent days sort of our own media starting to push this narrative a little bit, like, well, you know, who can blame the Russians for wanting to protect their interests there? But I mean, it is interesting when you watch this in real practice. Now, I want to move ahead and ask you, before we take any more calls or email questions, about the JFK assassination. And I myself and my partner, we wrote, Bob Yetman, my writing partner, we wrote a book on the JFK assassination that came out in the fall. And so as much as I was a real student of that event historically, I had never really gone into it as deeply as I did until I myself was writing a book about it. And I really wrestled with the whole question of Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, here's a guy who's a Marine. He basically renounces his citizenship and goes to Russia. And according to all the news stories, this guy was supposedly a flunky who knew nothing. He had some sort of a made-up job in a radio manufacturing plant and so forth. But then when you start looking into it further, you say, now, wait a minute. This is a guy who was a Marine. People who are one sandwich short of a lunch don't get into the Marines, and they don't learn Russian while they're in the Marines. They then don't get to expatriate to Russia and end up being able to come back with their travel expenses paid for, comes back with a Russian wife, and then is right in the middle of the JFK assassination, and yet the story that this guy was just a flunky, knew nothing, the Russians had no attachment to him. You really get into that in your book in a fascinating way. In fact, that could be a separate book that you could put together that I think would be a blockbuster about how the Russians, positioned Oswald so that we would not be suspicious of him. And then I have to ask you, would it then be your theory that he really was involved and was not just a fall guy?
Yeah, well, thanks, Jeff. And you're exactly correct. You know, the story that comes out, and it came from the Soviet Union, is that we didn't care about this guy. He's a flunky. We realized he's a nobody. It was so funny. I've actually, over December, I was, you know, watching all of the History Channel shows and all those kind of things on the assassination, kind of with new eyes because of all this work I've been doing. And I'm watching the show, and they're saying Lee Harvey Oswald was a nobody, and they didn't care about him. So it was sort of surprising when they moved him to the new town and gave him the nicest apartment in town. You know, I mean, it's they obviously were very interested in this guy, very concerned about this guy, considered him a potential asset. And why wouldn't you, right? In fact, there's reason to believe that he was providing, and we go into this a little bit in the book, that he was providing information to the Soviets before he went over to Russia or Soviet Union. He was in an area where he had access to important information about the heights of our spy planes. And remember, there was a famous spy plane that was shot down by the Soviets. There's you know, it's within fair speculation that he gave them information that allowed them to pinpoint the location of that plane and bring it down. So the thought that they just dismissed him out of hand from the very beginning, it really doesn't hold water. It's also, you know, we don't argue that he was carrying out the Kremlin's wishes when he shot Kennedy. We do think that, you know, they had considered him. You know, he took a shot. He took an attempted assassination at another official before the JFK shooting. So, I mean, he had been worked with to in some ways in terms of how to carry out a hit and how to get away with it, and he had gotten away and had escaped. He missed the shot, but he got away with a previous shooting. So the story that comes, and then of course what we go into in the book is the disinformation, the campaign by the Soviets to get everybody to look in different directions. We're not so much about that they were behind the shooting or anything, but they clearly did not want anyone looking very closely at what they did. And so they funded speakers, they funded books, some of the same, by the way, magazines, books, speakers, because this is about the same time frame, that were attacking Pope Pius XII and trying to say he was too soft on the Nazis. Same people were the ones who were saying it's the CIA who killed JFK. So, you know, that they had their people in place, and they used those facilities to put forth disinformation on both of those stories.
Yeah, it is interesting when you look back at, you know, historically, how you can really separate the fact that this guy is over in Russia and then returns and then, you know, according to the Warren Commission, kills the president, but yet there's no connection made between what he did and his time in Russia. It would seem like, yeah, that would be the logical thing you would conclude. And when you read the historical accounts, you see a lot of this, like you're mentioning, where they really minimized, if I were them, how would I repackage him and get him back to the United States? It would be exactly that way, to say, you know what, we kind of don't want this guy either. You can have him back. He's a crazy guy who, you know, we sort of humored him to let him in, and now we're going to put him back with you. That would be how you would do it, would be to really minimize him and look at him in that way. And yet it seems almost like we were afraid to make that connection at the time because of what that might have meant. Because if, in fact, we were to go down that road, it could have literally led to a nuclear war. And even though it was just the death of one man, John Kennedy, he was our president. And that would have clearly been an act of war if there was any connection whatsoever made between the Russians and Lee Harvey Oswald's actions on that day. That would have clearly been an act of war. And it could have meant the loss of tens of millions of lives in an exchange of nuclear weapons with the Russians. So part of this particular angle on things, Dr. Reichelt, just been that, hey, we didn't want to believe what was the truth, and so the disinformation worked even more effectively.
I think you're exactly right. I think President Johnson did not want to find anything, so we didn't want to look very hard. In terms of Lee Harvey Oswald, remember also when he came back to the United States, he was in the Fair Play for Cuba movement, so he's trying to support the closest communist nation to us, and he went to the Soviet consulate in Mexico shortly before the assassination. He was still trying to at least make contact, and perhaps actually making contact. We go into that a little bit in the book, believing that in fact he did make contact with Soviet handlers when he went to Mexico not too long before the assassination.
Very interesting. So those of you that are JFK assassination buffs, another reason to grab this book. And I did a search on my Kindle, and there's several references throughout. It's not just a one-time mention here. There's quite a few mentions about the JFK assassination throughout the book. Now, we've got an emailer. We've got a lot of emails coming in, but this one is a great question and one that I should have thought to write down before we even went on air tonight. Do you remember this moment where President Obama was caught? He didn't think he was on an open mic, but he was making a comment to tell Putin that he could become more flexible after the election. Do you remember this scene?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course.
So this emailer is making reference to that, and it really was a shocking thing to see, and it was amazing to me that the American public was not more up in arms about such a comment. Despite our better relations in recent years with the Russians, this was still quite a brazen thing for a president to say about, you know, in essence, playing political football with our, you know, with our national security, and having the word sent back to Putin that, look, I can become more flexible after the election. This emailer is asking, you know, what your thoughts are on how President Obama has managed the relationship with the Russians, and to what extent he's been able to be manipulated by disinformation.
Sure. Well, you know, the Putin's ability to trick or influence or overcome American leadership did not begin with Obama. But I think Obama believes that we're friendly guys. I'll get in a room, you know, we'll have a beer summit or something, and we'll make everything happy. Everything will be good. And Putin's just not that kind of a guy. Putin is the playground bully, and you know, Obama is the classroom president, and the bully's not afraid of the class president. I think that Obama really thought that, and you know, they're saying the other day, this is not 21st century activity, this is 19th century activity, 8th or 20th century activity. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, this is Putin. Putin was a KGB officer. He, when the Soviet Union fell, we did not have a period of cleansing. You know, when the Nazis went out of Germany, you had denazification panels. You got rid of the Nazis so they were not left in positions of power. We did not do that with the Soviet Union. In fact, Putin has surrounded himself with other former KGB guys. So you've got a nation that's really being run by an intelligence agency, the KGB folks. And you know, they're not concerned about getting together for coffee and figuring out, you know, what we're going to politely do next. Putin called the dissolution of the Soviet Union the worst catastrophe of the 20th century. I think he'd like to bring it back together, and that's his aim.
And we've got one more question here. This is an emailer coming in from Chicago, and then we'll give you a moment to tell us all about the book and where people can get it. And our guest tonight is Dr. Ronald Reichlach, and the name of the book is Disinformation. This is a great question. Somebody wants to know to what extent the Russians try to influence U.S. elections and how they might use disinformation to maybe choose a lesser of two evils or select the you know, the leaders that they feel that they might be able to manage much better than another option.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a great question. I think that in terms of elections, it's less a matter of them getting involved directly at the time of election. It's more a long-term process. They used to always argue and say that the Communist Party of America, for instance, was an independent thing separate from the Soviet Union. We go back and we look at it now, and it's quite clear that it and every Communist Party in the world has been an arm of the Communist Party in the Soviet Union, or was back then, and I believe it still is today. So we've got people in place today who may not even think of themselves as doing the bidding of Russia, of Putin, or anyone like that, but have bought into that ideology. And so they, in fact, are working for those causes, you know, maybe not even realizing that's what they're doing. So the spread of disinformation becomes a thing unto its own. So they don't have to become involved in a case-by-case or a contest-by-contest evaluation. They've put it out there. They've created the monster. They feed the monster a little bit, and it works for their advantage continually.
Now, as we close out tonight, tell us about the book. Give us a little overview of the book. Take a minute or so. And if you have a website you'd like to give out, any other information that you'd like to share with our listeners tonight.
Well, sure thing. The book goes through, I think of three really big stories. There were three things my co-author wanted to do when he came to America. He wanted to set the world straight on three areas where he had contributed to the world misunderstanding. One was making everyone believe that Nicolae Ceausescu, the leader of Romania, was a great man and a good man and a man the West could do business with. He wasn't. He was a butcher who committed genocide, and he paid the price for it. So that's story number one we have in there. Story number two, Pope Pius XII, who the world, my co-author helped the world believe that he was he didn't care about Jewish suffering, too close to the Nazis. We go into that. Story number three is the Kennedy assassination. And the role in that. And then the new thing, the thing that takes it up to today, is the role that the Soviets and disinformation had in cultivating hatred in the Mideast, anti-Semitism in the Mideast, and developing terrorism that has morphed into what we are experiencing around the globe today. My co-author was involved in cultivating that and sending false propaganda out in throughout the Middle East. And, he's sorry for that. In some ways, this book is saying, man, I did some bad things, and I really love America, and I want to get us back on the right direction. And to do that, I've got to tell you what we did, and hope people will A, understand, and B, be willing to stand up and try to get us back on the right course. The book is available, everywhere, Amazon.com. There's an audio version. There's a Kindle version. There's hardback. WND.net. Our publisher is WorldNet Daily, WND, and they've got a number of articles that appear. My co-author Pachepa writes a lot of articles. It's Pacepa, P-A-C-E-P-A, and if you want to see some of his writing, you can pull up some that way.
So his current writing is under his name, his Soviet name, but just
right.
As a person,
yeah.
He's not living under that name anymore. But if someone were to go to the internet to search for his current writing, they would search under Pachepa.
That's correct.
Okay,
yeah,
very good.
We have kind of a joke. I know Superman, but I don't know Clark Kent, so I don't know his secret identity.
Very good. Dr. Ronald Reichelach, good to have you with us, sir. The book is Disinformation, and we're excited to be able to talk about that tonight. And we're going to put him on hold, and producer Joy is going to say goodbye to him. And we want to say happy birthday this week to one of our producers, Faith. Faith is having a birthday this week on March the 13th. So, Faith, we want to wish you a happy birthday. And be sure to check out the article on my blog, Faith, where you can get all the free birthday meals. By the way, if you haven't seen this, folks, over at blog.christianmoney.com, if you just go there and do a search, the word birthday, you'll find an article that I wrote a few years back, and I've updated it from time to time, about all the free meals you can get on your birthday. And it's really ridiculous. And what's really cool about all these free meals you can get on your birthday is a lot of them, you don't have to actually get them on the actual day of your birthday. So you can get like three or four meals on your birthday itself and then get coupons for the other free meals that you can sort of spread out over a couple of weeks after your birthday. One article I read, a guy says he got over $700 in free food on his birthday. Now, I never made out quite that well, but I would probably say I've gotten into the $200-$250 range of free food on my birthday. So check that out. And again, happy birthday to producer Faith. Don't miss us next week. We'll be with Dr. Ron Rhodes talking about Mormonism. In 2 weeks, Sandy Botkin talking about how to lower your taxes. And then big news is coming about the program. We're going to be going on a satellite network, and we'll have some details for you on that probably within the next 1 to 2 weeks. This is Jim Paris here, as always, to help you make the most of God's money. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit ChristianMoney.com or send an email to jim@ChristianMoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.